Welcome to 2819. I'm Sandra Dimas.
And I'm Brian Rohenbacher.
And today we're going to be talking about Jesus among other religious leaders. Such a deep topic.
Yeah, definitely. We're only covering like a few different of other religions and their leaders. There's tons out there, but we're kind of focusing in on the main ones today. Yeah. So it'll be interesting conversations.
So what's happening in everyday apologetics?
In everyday apologetics, we're going to hear about the Christian and Muslim views of prayer from apologist Abdu Murray.
And in Science Faith Connection, Jeff Zwerink will be talking with philosopher and theologian Ken Samples, and they're going to be discussing if all religions can be true. That's such a common belief these days, that all of them are all the same, and we kind of borrow a little bit from here, a little bit from column A, a little bit column B. So it'll be nice to hear.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of claims that that's going on, so it's going to be good.
Yeah.
First up, though, we have Culture Talk. Sandra's also going to be speaking with Ken Samples, and they're going to be talking about Jesus and how he compares to other religious leaders. So it's going to be really interesting, lots of new things to learn. Let's check it out.
Welcome to Culture Talk, where we talk about culturally relevant topics that you can use to start conversations about your faith. I'm joined today with philosopher, theologian, and author of God Among Sages, Ken Samples.
Hi, Sandra.
Thank you for joining us. Sure. We're going to be talking in today's episode about Jesus as compared to other religious sages. And it's just really good to kind of get a full picture of who these sages were and how they viewed the world. So let's kind of unpack some of the sages that you discuss in your book, God Among Sages. So who are those religious figures?
Well, I start with Krishna, who is the most important deity within the Hindu faith. And what's interesting about Hinduism, you can have different views. You can have pantheism, polytheism, or monotheism. I mean, you can be a Hindu and believe in one God. That kind of surprises people. But Krishna is seen as the principal deity. And again, for those who would practice, let's say, Krishna consciousness, think of George Harrison with the Beatles, for example. They would think of one deity, and that would be Krishna. Again, other Hindus might approach it from the world as God. You have popular Hinduism would say there's 330 million gods. So even in Hinduism, there's a diversity of views. Buddha is different. He comes out of India. His family background is going to be Hinduism, but he makes a break with that. It's probable that Buddha didn't believe in God, or if he did, he didn't talk about it. So you could be a Buddhist and be an atheist, or you can be more of an evolved Buddhist and maybe believe in multiple gods. Let's see, so Krishna, Buddha, Confucius, again, doesn't talk a lot about theology. But there are some leading scholars today who think that Confucius was a theist. He believed in one personal deity. So that's significant, I think. Now with Muhammad, belief in one God, that God is Allah, a single solitary person. So those would be broadly the views of God reflected by those four individuals.
And you break down kind of what each sage believes and how Jesus is distinct from those. So can you talk about some of the categories like worldview, cosmos, humanity? What are the different beliefs among those sages and how is Christ different?
Yeah, well, again, with Krishna, you're going to have one deity. You may have other alternatives. I mean, you can be a Hindu and be a pantheist. You can be a Hindu and be, they call it Malatriism. It's close to monotheism. In Buddhism, you can adopt atheism. The Buddhists, interestingly enough, believe the universe is, it's constantly moving into existence and out of existence. And so you have some kind of eternal universe. Confucius, it's hard to know what he believed. Probably he believed something like a creation, although we're not sure. And then with Muhammad, he believed that Allah had created the world. But in Islam, it's not a redemptive faith. So God is the creator, he is ruler, but he's not necessarily redeemer.
Okay.
Now, how would that differ with Jesus? I think in some personal ways it becomes very clear. I liked reading about Buddha and Confucius, and I'll tell you why. They were very candid about their brokenness. Mm. They said they couldn't even live up to their own moral principles. They categorically said, along with Muhammad, that they're mere human beings. Yeah. So certainly Jesus would differ in some very important ways. His claims to deity, mm-hmm. claiming to be the great I Am of the Old Testament. Jesus would also be different in his holiness. I mean, he says to his family, he says to Pontius Pilate, the religious leaders, can any of you point to sin in my life? I mean, try that on a Christmas Day party right. with your family, right?
I'll show you the text. Here you go.
But if Krishna ever existed, he didn't always act in a holy manner. Mm. Buddha and Confucius admit that they are not perfect, and Muhammad clearly was not a perfect person. And I think probably another element in all of that is the miracles in Jesus' mm-hmm. life, particularly his resurrection.
Right.
All four of those individuals, if Krishna is a historical person, they died and they stayed dead. Mm-hmm. With Jesus, you have the resurrection from the dead.
And there is historical evidence to show that there's a huge cultural shift after Christ was resurrected, correct?
That births Christianity, the emergence of the church, eyewitness testimony. I mean, if you take someone like Buddha, Buddhist scholars don't know what century Buddha was born in. Mm. Hindu scholars don't know whether Krishna was a historical person or not. I mean, Christians argue about, was Jesus born in 6 or 4 BC? Did he die in 30 or 33? But those are very small margins mm-hmm. compared to other religions.
Right. And so what would be the central problem that humanity deals with from these different perspectives, these different religious views?
I don't think there's anything in those religions that is like grace. I mean, Buddha and Confucius and Krishna and Muhammad, none of them do anything that changes the status of their followers before God in the afterlife. Mm. Like Christ, it is his death that takes away our sins. It's his death that makes us right with God. In those religions, there's no atonement per se made by them.
Yeah. And then in Christianity, we have atonement.
In Christianity, the Lord makes us right. He forgives us. Mm-hmm. He comes at Christmas, he dies at Easter, and it's that death that forgives our sin and puts us right with God again.
So the whole point of the show is to really have conversations with yeah. people and be equipped to have those conversations. So how would you have a conversation with someone as they're exploring, just comparing these religious figures?
I would say always start with common ground. And we have,
I like that.
We have a lot of common ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the religions of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Confucianism, and that's a lot of isms. Mm-hmm. All of them have the second five of the Ten Commandments. There's a common morality that mm-hmm. we share. Now, I don't think we should be surprised by that. If Christianity is true, God's made everybody in his image. We all have a conscience. Mm-hmm. There are moral principles built into the world. So I would start there. I would begin with, you know, in a Christian context, we believe people are made in the image of God. Therefore, we believe we should treat them with dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. Do you share that? Is that something you also affirm? I would begin there. I would also begin with the question of what is the fundamental problem with human beings? What, yeah. you know, why do we have so much strife and difficulty in society? You know, are we sinful? And how would you explain that? And then, of course, if the opportunity affords, you can then move to maybe the uniqueness of Christianity, the uniqueness of the person of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot to unpack here, Ken.
Yeah.
So hopefully we will continue as we go through the show to dig more into some distinctions between Christianity and the other religions. But if you would like to know more about this topic, go to shop.reasons.org and search for Ken's book, God Among Sages.
When I was about 16 or 17, I became actually interested in Islam and spent about a year exploring Islam. And part of that was my father teaching me how to pray. And so I would I remember getting up and going through a prayer ritual every day. And as a young man, that became rather burdensome. And so I basically gave up doing that. And later I became a Christian. And as I look back on my life, and particularly that experience exploring Islam, I realized that there is a big difference in how Muslims and Christians view prayer. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. Now, one of the things we can actually learn from our Muslim friends is their attitude towards prayer in one aspect is very reverential and very sort of they approach it with a level of austerity. Because in order to pray, for example, there's five daily prayers a Muslim prays throughout the course of the day, ranging from, you know, the crack of dawn, basically, to before their head hits the pillow again at night, and in between. And they're a little different, but they're very ritualistic. They face Mecca. They get a prayer rug out, and that creates a sacred space for their prayer. They have to wash. That's called wudu, where they wash their hands from their tips to the fingers of their elbows and their knees to the bottoms of their feet. They'll wash their face. You have to approach God in a very pure way, focusing solely on the prayers and thinking about what you're going to be saying. And it's usually the same thing or slight variations throughout the day. And there are postures you take. You stand, you put your hands behind your ears, or you'll put your hands on your knees, or you'll prostrate yourself. Depending on, you know, what sect of Islam, there's some slight differences, but it's very ritualistic. But there's an austerity there. And the fact that they approach it that way should help Christians who have, I think, sometimes a little bit too cavalier of an attitude toward prayer, like they're talking to their buddies or something. There's an aspect of austerity that needs to happen there. But if you notice something, a Muslim approaches God in prayer, and he's got to be clean before he comes. Now, that's fine and dandy to a certain degree, but at some level, see what it does? It suggests that in order to come before a God who cleanses us, we have to be clean first. We have to present ourselves as if we have done something for him. Whereas in Christianity, what tells us to pray without ceasing and to have this intimate relationship with God, that we come recognizing our filthiness and that he's the one who cleans us, and that prayer itself is a cleansing process. The communication is what cleanses us, not just the water and the postures and these kinds of things. So there's an austerity we need to learn from, but there's also a sense of intimacy that we can impart to our Muslim friends and say, when I pray, I do it this way. And it's not facing a certain direction or whatever it might have to be. It's an intimacy level, and it's a pureness of heart that I come to him with contrition, but also with a sense of intimacy that he is the one who hears my prayer. I don't do it out of fear or out of a sense of obligation. I do it because it's the communication. It fulfills my soul. And it is this communication with God that is specific and it's reverential, yet it's intimate at the same time. So I think that's an important part of our interaction and discussion with our Muslim friends about what prayer actually is.
Now, it seems to me that there is a pretty profound connection between how we understand the concept of God and the practice and what we seek to accomplish through prayer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there not?
There is. When you look at, for example, what Muslims say during the prayers that are sort of the ritualized prayers. Now, there's two kinds of prayers in Islam. There is the regular five times a day prayers, and then there are prayers at different holidays for different things and that kind of thing. It's also been called dua, where you actually ask God for things, and you actually can say things that whatever's on your heart to God about family, about yourself, about whatever it is. So there's a supplication that happens there, and it's a little more on the intimate side, not quite as intimate as a Christian prayer, but it's still intimate. But you approach God with the sense of he's aloof. He is not interacting with us in an intimate way, and that's who God is. He does not condescend to interact with us in this way. And so the prayers reflect that because we approach him very sort of gingerly and with a sense of, you know, don't strike me down kind of a thing, and with a fear. And I don't mean just a reverential fear, but an actual fear of God. And that's a difference because in Christianity, if he's intimate, if he is the God who teaches us himself, Jesus says in the Our Father, essentially, this is how you should pray, Our Father who is in heaven, the austerity, and give us this day our daily bread, and lead us not into temptation. And all, it's a very austere prayer, but it's also intimate in a sense because we get to call him Father. Mm-hmm. And a Muslim would never say that about right. a God. So that nature of that intimacy of children to father is different than master to slave.
Right. So Allah is unknowable for a Muslim, but God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are knowable to us. Mm-hmm. And it's not only through the revelation that we have, the record of nature, the words of Scripture, the consciousness or our conscience, but it's also through prayer that we know God as well.
Absolutely. Prayer is misconceived sometimes in the West as getting God to conform His will to ours, when it's exactly the opposite. It is the effort for human beings to conform our will to God's and to know who He is, and prayer is the best way to do that.
Hello, Jeff Zwerink, and welcome to the segment of 2819, where we get to take a deeper dive and explore the scholarly and intellectual issues surrounding a topic. Today, we're going to talk with Ken Samples, and we're going to be looking at the question, can all the world's religions be true? Ken, good to have you here today.
Hi, Jeff.
So there's a lot of different things that people believe, different gods, different creatures, different the way the world works, and different explanations for everything. And there's kind of this prevailing idea that everybody's kind of got their own truth, or everybody can kind of believe what they want. And it seems like that's flies in the face of there being a truth. You know, how do you respond to the question, can all the world religions be true?
Yeah, I have three fundamental problems with that. The first one is, they all teach different things. And it's not minor beliefs. Like in Christianity, you know, maybe my church, we baptize infants, you only baptize adults. Or we may have secondary views about the Lord's Supper. No, these are fundamental differences. I mean, some religions believe in one God. Some religions believe in many gods. Other religions believe the universe is God. So we can't agree as to what God is, and we don't even agree about who God is. Is God a person? Is He not a person? Second problem.
So it's not just that there are some differences, it's that there are fundamental differences that are, if one's true, the other one can't be, because they believe contradictory ideas as opposed to just difficult to reconcile.
And so for point one, these are not small differences. They're genuine differences. Second reason, there's no lowest common denominator. I mean, there's no ultimate reductionistic point of view in which we can find. I mean, some might say, well, what about ethics? Don't Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists have similar ethics? Well, they all have the second five of the Ten Commandments, but their ethical ideas are tied to very different ideas of theology. For example, in Christianity, we treat people with dignity and value because they're made in the image of God. So our theology drives our ethics. That's the second reason, lowest common denominator. And third is the biggest issue, and you've alluded to it. They not only have differences, they are logically contradictory. I'll give you a real good example, Christianity and Islam. Christianity says Jesus Christ is God incarnate. Islam says Jesus Christ is not God incarnate. Now, they negate or deny each other. One of those is wrong. So the idea that all religions are true is it's logically conflicting and I think therefore false.
So, I mean, I know there are people who may argue that they're all just variations on a theme or whatever, and I think a lot of people would agree with your assessment that there's no way all of them can be true. So that's maybe a less controversial question than this one is, how can we tell if one of them is, one and only one of them is true? What would we do to evaluate that question?
Well, I think we could probably do a few things. I talk about in my book, A World of Difference, I talk about worldview tests. One of the worldview tests is, the first one would be the logical coherence test. I mean, if you have a religion and it's filled with contradictions, and there's no way of kind of, bringing it to a kind of a rational conclusion, I think that's a negative test. If your religion is filled with logical contradictions, it's going to be false. Now, if it's not, then we can move to another test.
Well, okay, so that's an interesting question, because a lot of people would say, you know, you take Christianity, well, you've got this God in the Old Testament who's vindictive, wrathful, and that yet he's claimed to be a God of love, that would be a contradiction. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Well, it's certainly true that even in Christianity, people raise questions. I mean, we believe in mysteries, the mm-hmm. Trinity, the incarnation, or even the attributes of God. How can God be wrathful? How can God be loving? But, of course, what we do in Christianity is we say that a mystery is not a contradiction. It's true. We may not know exactly how it's true, but Christian thinkers through the centuries have proposed models for why the Trinity isn't a contradiction, why the incarnation is not a contradiction. And in case of God's wrath and his goodness, well, for God to be just, he has to be both loving and just, and therefore wrath and love are not contradictory. That's not an easy issue to settle, but it's a fundamental question.
So it seems like what's going on there is not, do things appear to be contradictory? I think it sounds like you're talking about something that, when you get down to it, like you said, with the difference between Christianity and Islam, either Christ is God incarnate or he's not God incarnate. You can't have both together at the same time.
And let's say in some of the Eastern religions, Hinduism would be an example, they kind of revel in the idea of contradiction.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So at that point, I'm concerned. Now, if it passes the logical test, and by the way, I think Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all have a lot of logical coherence. At that point, I would start asking other questions like explanatory power. Can a religion, for example, does it have a good explanation as to the world, the universe, fine-tuning in the universe, that the universe had a beginning? How about human beings? Can it explain, as Pascal called, the greatness and wretchedness? Can it explain objective morality and truth? Then I can begin applying and testing and looking at their their revelatory books and things of that nature.
So, you know, that's an interesting question or interesting point you raised there, because I've heard, or, you know, people have responded to me as in discussions I've had, that they think Buddhism is true because it does the best job of explaining the suffering that we experience in the world. So is it the case that is it sufficient to just find an area like that, or is there more to what you're talking about?
Well, I would say that all of the major religions have certain explanatory power, or people would just candidly reject them. I agree. I think Siddhartha Gautama, who became the Buddha, I think he has a diagnosis about the human condition that, you know, the world is impermanent and people are holding on to things and they're suffering. I think Buddhism's strong point is the idea that it's identified suffering. Now, the solution to the suffering, I don't think is nearly as viable and as powerful as the Christian gospel.
So we've got that you've got to look for internal coherence, logical coherence. You look for explanatory power. What other tools do we have to evaluate worldviews?
I'll throw in one more. What I call the existential test. Is this religion livable? Does it bring a person fulfillment and satisfaction in life? Does it answer some of the deepest yearnings and longings that people have in life? And so in looking at those, we think logically first. We then ask what kind of explanatory power, and then we look inside. Does it answer the existential yearnings of real people?
So I think those are a great set of tools, and I'm just reminded of a challenge that I've heard is that, we're talking about different religions and Buddhism and Christianity and Islam, but, a number of skeptics who I've heard will say, you know, you don't believe in all those other gods, I just don't believe in one more than you. So the idea is that all of the world religions are wrong. How do you respond to that charge or that claim?
Well, I would first of all say, what kind of religion is it? I mean, there are some religions, the Greco-Roman religions, they were intended to be mythological. They were intended that the gods were made in the image of human beings. Mm-hmm. I mean, the goal of the gods was to seduce the beautiful maidens. That sounds like a man-oriented religion
right.
to me. So I would look at the religious claims that are made. I'm not going to reject all religions categorically. I'm going to test them. I'm going to work through them. I would simply say to the atheist, have you worked through some of these claims? And maybe more importantly, have you worked through your own logical claims? So, yeah, I think there are some religions that don't have much explanatory power. They're not terribly coherent. But neither do I think atheism is really a coherent and I think it lacks explanatory power.
Well, thanks, Ken. I really appreciate your comments. You know, it really is true that when we look out at the world, there's lots of different explanations for how we got here, what's important, and what the ultimate reality is. And yet it seems like deep inside our being, we yearn to know the truth. And I love what Ken has brought because he's given us tools to evaluate what is true. And my challenge to you would be to go out and ask the questions, how do you evaluate whether your worldview is true and those around? And I would just encourage you to do that because you will be better equipped to find the truth and align your life with that truth.
Well, that does it for us this week on 2819. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that you learned something new about Jesus and other religions and can help you with navigating these conversations.
Yeah, you know, I found it really interesting to just kind of explore some of the ways that we do have some common ground, but also what those distinctions are. And mm-hmm. I think it's fine to have those distinctions. We get to then decide which one fits best with, you know, with the world that we engage with. You know.
Yeah, and I loved your conversation with Ken. Yeah. One of the things that I took away kind of, you know, related to those distinctions is that Jesus claimed to be a deity, right. while there's been many other religious leaders who have not done that. Right. So it's very interesting to see, like, how do these religious figures actually, you know, see themselves and respond to questions and stuff.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I hope that people really just came to understand that we really need to know, like, what we're claiming and be able to speak into conversations that we have with people from different faiths. To really know kind of what our God says, what their God says.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear your takeaways. So find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Have we done anything else? Snapchat's gone, right?
Yeah,
like we're not doing that one anymore.
I think we're on MySpace too.
Oh, MySpace. Anyway, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at 2819 Show. Let us know, you know, what's been your experience of other religions and talking to people of different faiths, and what did you learn in this episode?
And hey, if you want to check out the audio version, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. Search Reasons to Believe Podcasts. Well, that about does it for us. We'll see you next week.
Bye.